All right, it's so wonderful to see so many people here on Thanksgiving morning. It's the best way to start the Thanksgiving. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on announcements today because I got three wonderful speakers going to speak for us today. And we're going to start off with Lillian. Let's welcome Lillian.
Hi, I'm Lillian. I'm a compulsive overeater. Talk about needing no introduction and getting none, right? Can I have 8 and 2? Whoever's timing, timers, please shut me up because I'll just keep going. Somebody timing? Timing? Okay. I'll attempt to be concise with the background. So I was like fat from as long as I can remember.
Who are you?
Lillian. I said, you. The wonderful thing about not knowing until 5 minutes ago that I was speaking is you have no time to get nervous, no rehearsal. The only thing I would have done different is I would have brought my fat pictures. So you just picture two more layers, like 65, 75 pounds. I mean, the top number doesn't change. What changes is where I am now that makes the difference. But I came to the front initially like 35 years ago and was here for a couple of years. It was fabulous. I mean, when I was from New York, surprise. And there I would always go on these diets and on these programs, and at 10 years old, the school nurse I had gone to because I had back pains, just lose some weight, so my mother came in and said, of course, this is a healthy food, you know, very sensible diet, fruit, vegetable, protein. My mother being a Jewish mother, so, yes, but if it's made with love, it doesn't count. If you didn't get out, it doesn't count. It's the same rules as with kosher. Shrimp and pork, okay, it's not in the house, but it still goes in the body, and I couldn't explain that concept, you know? So I fought this battle forever and would go on a diet and maybe lose a few pounds, get, you know, that euphoria that sets in, and then there would be temptation. I was fine until nothing came. Once something did, I would eat it and say, oh, what's the use, and go right back again. And it was this vicious cycle. And you know, you look at magazines, oh, look, I wish I could be this, I wish I could be that. It never occurred to me, so I got to say, you could be that if you really meant it, you know, instead of the bullshit fantasizing. It's the kind of thing that, you know, we still do it. I don't anymore because I stopped myself. So if you really wanted to be that, you could. You have the power to do that, you know. But I want it in fantasy. I don't want in reality have to deal with all that, you know. Adored and admiration and too much money and all. Oh, my God. How would one handle that? So, I mean, I can say we only see who we are by our actions, not by what we think or feel or say, wouldn't that be nice? So I really have gotten to be such a pain in the ass. I have so little patience. Was, oh, wow, oh, I'd love to be that. I said, well, be it, do it. At least take one little step on the path, you know, in reality to do it. So, at any rate, I moved to California and still haven't fought the battle forever and met somebody at a party in the kitchen who's, you know, shouldn't, you know, usually I shouldn't eat that or it looks so good. Oh, really? Why? He said, well, I just lost a lot of weight. And that was it. I never looked back. And so I came to a meeting here. Back then they had this gray sheet, which was kind of a diet, but fortunately, since we're not doctors, we're not medical experts, we don't do that anymore, giving out diets to people, because that's not who we are. We're regular people who can share our own experience, strength, and hope, and what works for us. And nobody would ever say we're not nutritionists. I mean, some of us may be nutritionists, but the program isn't. And it's fine, there's a million great diet plans. And you know what I discovered? When I left the program for about 15 years. I got married. I was out of the country. I had children. I couldn't possibly bring a child because if they went peep, I would die, you know? Things, thank God, have changed a lot since then. People can bring babies. They make noise to take them for a walk. But then it just wasn't done. So at any rate, I went out researching and making sure if there was an easier, softer way. And I really did it. I mean, I did the pregnant women urine shots, Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, all of it. And I have thin friends that works for them. They put on some weight. They want to take it off. They do the program. You see them 3 months later. It's gone. What did you do? They said, well, you know, I said I was going to go on the diet. I said, well, but I said that too, you know. And they do, and it comes off. The only thing is they don't deal with the compulsion for compulsive overeating that we have and what we're eating about, which has nothing to do with food and all those other issues. But that's not what they're there for. You know, they do a great job at what they do. And I know people on the program have gone to other eating plans and all, and it's great. But I think what keeps you on them is having the phone calls and the tools and the writing and the 12 steps and God. Excuse me. Probably in the wrong order, but God and the higher power. And today, being Thanksgiving, I'm especially feeling grateful because about a year and a half ago, I did a half marathon. And, 13 miles and all, it was great. And I had such knee problems from that. As friends of mine said, what the hell, did you start that exercising crap? Until then, you're fine, you know? Now, you can't walk. You're limping like an old lady. I mean, so I went to the chiropractor and the physical therapist, and we did stretches and different things. And about 2 months ago, my regular doctor said, let's try cortisone shot. Boom. Done. Before I said yes, no, it's been 8 weeks, and thank you, God. It's like, I'm back. And I know it doesn't last forever, and I know it could eat away at your bones if you do it too much, and all the negatives, which I heard immediately, you know. But in the meantime, it's so positive, and I'm so grateful for stuff that I always had. And I was like the healthy one of my friends who are my age, who are a little younger, but they seem to be getting old. I don't get it. But I was the one that my eyes, I could see the menu, you know, and I could walk fast, and I'd be, come on. And then my kids, who are both taller than me, and I'm taller than mine. There's really something to this. You know, each generation seems to be. And now they will be walking. Come on. God, there is a payback and there is a justice. But what the program did for me, which now I've been abstaining for 14 years, July 3rd, lost, like I said, about 65, 75 pounds. Whether I should say I'm maintaining or abstaining, I don't know. I'll talk to my sponsor. But for the moment, I seem to have been at a weight for about 12 years, you know? So I'm thinking maybe I should accept it. I don't know, but then there are moments where I'll say, no, tighten up the abstinence, eliminate this or eliminate that. Things that we know we can do, because I know when I came in, I was like, you know, I can do anything. And the very first night, it was the Hollywood Bowl with my chicken breast, my carrot sticks, my celery sticks. And you know how people eat, so taste this. Oh, this is so good. And sitting there, I'm thinking, if I make it through this one, I can make it through anything. Because how often is it literally under your nose, you know? And God got me through that. And through a lot of other things. And the important thing I discovered is that it didn't take away the right to be miserable, to be unhappy, to get depressed about things and all. But early on, this abstinence one day, I said, oh, God, I feel like crying. My son said, just cry. You know? And I said, oh, I never thought of that. It would be too busy to shovel in the food so you don't have to feel it. And you know, the feeling it wasn't so bad. And then when it's over and you've written or have done or made phone calls, whatever the particular thing is, I'm like flying. And I don't have to wake up in the morning with that, oh shit, did I really eat all that? Oh my God, how could I? What do I feel? And it's true. You know what they say about Thanksgiving Day for OA is like New Year's Eve for AA. It's for the amateurs. Leave it to them, you know? People that could, they'll binge for the day or the month, they'll say, oh, so that's it. Okay, eat some more. You'll be back on tomorrow. God forbid, because I don't know that there is a tomorrow. And I don't know that I can go through this again. And frankly, there is nothing, the most important thing I can say, there is nothing that tastes good enough to find out, to have to try. Because I've tasted everything. A little more this, a little less of that. But really, I have. And I see gorgeous looking foods, and if I can stop the connection from my eye, to say, oh, it's gorgeous. Or I can smell it, no calories, you know? And just say, it's like a picture. It's like these gorgeous boutique stores you go by. When you see the windows, it's gorgeous. But I don't want one little thing in that window. I want everything in unlimited quantities. And as soon as someone says, you just have a little bite. I don't do little bites, you know? I mean, I have my 3 meals a day of snacks sometimes, of foods. I can't do sugars and breads and all the really fun foods. And sometimes I feel really bored about food. The great thing about Thanksgiving is the sweets are not really a big deal with it, you know? It's so much more like protein, carbs, and the kind of stuff I can deal with and sort of eat like a lady and maybe leave a crumb on the plate or something, you know? And anyway, so the program has given me like a whole second life that I'm exceptionally grateful for today, especially being Thanksgiving. And I think I'll let some of our wonderful, wonderful talkers talk. So thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, that's Lillian. Well, we do have one announcement and probably a couple others before the day is over. And we're going to have a very special guest come up. And Harriet is here today to tell you about the birthday party.
Oi, they. Hello, everybody. How are you? This is my dog, Lila. I hope you all come up and say hello. Anyway, I didn't know I was talking about the birthday party, so I don't know what to say about it. It's in February, what is it, February what? February 23rd to 25, and we have online registration, or you can register here, right, with Kaya. And but I did want to talk about the birthday party candles, because I'm very proud of them. There are these lovely little Stay for the Miracle in a polypropylene box. Woo-hoo! Okay, they're $4 each, and or 3 for 10. And let's see, 4 flavors. There's jasmine, lavender, peppermint, and green tea. Okay? And they burn for 8 days. That's really special. And that's it. So come on over to the table and say hello to my dog. All right? Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, without any further ado, I'm not going to tell you who the next speaker is, except his name is John.
Hi, I'm John from Pulsadita. Wow, look at this group here. You know, it's interesting. I have a very small family in terms of in nuclear family, and this is more of my family. I look around, I see people who I've had long conversations with, much more interaction with than my regular family, and it's just sort of neat, and I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving, and thank you, Darwin, for asking me. And it's interesting, I don't really feel like talking about food today. I know this is a food day, everybody's got to go deal with all that. You know, the usual Thanksgiving at my house was, you know, getting stuffed, and then you come and look at my living room about 2 and 4 in the afternoon, and it, you know, looked like there was a gas leak, because everybody's... I want to talk about program because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I've been coming to both programs for 25 years now, and a good 24 plus years ago, I remember talking to a sponsor, mentioning about all of the horrible problems in my life and how, oh my God, how bad this is happening, and this and you know, this whole source of my life, and if that kind of thing happens, you know what a good sponsor is going to tell you to do, don't you? Everybody don't write a gratitude list. And if I remember the first time somebody told me to write a gratitude list, I rolled my eyes. I'm like, oh, I can't believe this hokey program and all this stuff. But I went and did it, you know, and I wrote this gratitude list and came back and read it to him. And, you know, it had things like, you know, I'm grateful like God gave me a great mind and this and that. And I read this list down and he listened very patiently. And when I was done, he said, you know, you set the bar awfully high there, didn't you? And I went, what do you mean? He says, well, you didn't talk about you have two legs. You have two arms. You have eyes. You can see. You can hear. You were born in America, you know. You know, where does it say that you weren't meant to, you know, be born without legs on the streets of Calcutta with no family? Just the grace of God. And it really did get me seeing that my perspective on life when it comes to stuff like that is skewed. I tend to take all the things that I have for granted most of the time and gripe about the things that I don't. And, you know, if there was ever a city where you have a choice of which way you want a point to look at for comparison, I can turn and compare myself up to Bel Air or down to South Central. And you know what? I'm way in the middle on everything. And that's what I really realize. And it's just fine. And I know on that first gratitude list, one of the things I probably didn't write was that I'm grateful for program, and I'm grateful for the 12 steps, and I'm grateful for what was been outlined in the big book, because I hadn't experienced any of the gifts at that time as to what you get when you do that. And this has been a very emotional couple of months for me, and especially the last couple of years, because I have started to see what the promises are all about. You know, I recited them for years, and everything made, you know, intellectual sense, but it really started sinking in a couple of years ago, and this year in particular. You know, I have watched the personality change, especially in the last few years. I walked around, and you'll see this a lot with men more than anything. We tend to take all of our emotions and channel them toward anger. Because that's a macho emotion, you know. Being afraid, fear, that's not very macho. Having hurt, that's not very macho. So we end up taking it all and it becomes angry. And I used to say I walked around most of my life 5 degrees off boiling at any moment. Now, I could be perfectly friendly with you and everything's going fine because I'm not being brought that 5 degrees up. But it would be very easy to make me angry and I would tend to have a very dismal attitude about life. And part of that is the family in which I was raised. I can look back, you know, when I would go home to visit my mother and see that there was a very negative attitude about things and everybody's out to get you, you know. I'm in another program where they have these 20 questions and one of them is, do you think that people in society in general are out to get you? And I remember laughing saying, I think my mother actually sat me down and said, people and society in general are out to get you. It was certainly what you got, you know. Be careful, be on your guard, walk through life, you know. And so I would go through life making sure I had everything covered so that I didn't get hurt, I didn't get screwed, I didn't have this. And you know what? I don't want to live that way anymore because that comes with a price. You know what? I tend now, I mean, okay, this is going to sound, I'm going to pontificate for a second. There's a movie out right now, and it's a very funny, I'm sure, comedy where a guy goes out and he sets up this phony kind of film thing, and then he makes fun of people who have come to be interviewed. Now, I'm not saying most of these people don't deserve a little of it, but I have trouble watching that kind of thing because these people sat down with an open mind and to be genuine and honest to help this person, and then the person turned around. And you know what? These days, I'll be that person that happens to. I'm not going to be, this person's out to turn the tables on me because I don't want to live that way anymore, you know? What's happened to me in the last couple of months that I think I'll talk about because I can see the value of this program, you know? That thing they said in the promises, we'll intuitively know how to handle things that used to baffle us. For a long time, I didn't get that, and all of a sudden, you find yourself starting to turn around and go, wow, I intuitively handle that. That would have baffled me before, and not understanding that. You know, a couple of years ago on Christmas Day, I had a major car accident where a car just cut in front of me and hit me and went off and left me. It was all his fault, but he took off, and so did the three witnesses that could help me. And I remember sitting here waiting for like 2 months afterwards, where's the anger? Where's the anger? And I'm thinking, something's wrong, and it never came. I was hurt, I was annoyed, but I didn't walk around with that. That would have been good for 6 months of gut training before. The other thing that happened to me is somewhere, I don't remember the date, but it was between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I got a call that my mother got sick and got rushed to the hospital back east. And you know, my mother's always been one of these people. She wanted her distance. She wanted her, you know, it's okay, I'm fine. And she said, I'd like you to be here. And that was a sign that something was going on. So I ended up getting on a plane, going back there and being with her. And she was very sick. And she has real serious lung stuff. And they didn't know if she was going to pull through. And I spent about 2+ weeks in this intensive care unit, you know. And it's where, you know, I remember somewhere it got in here at probably in my first couple of weeks in program, when the stuff hits the fan, go to meetings, keep going, keep contact. And I was going to meetings of all my different 12-step programs every day, maybe twice a day. And I was utilizing the assets that were there, the people who could help me, you know. I would talk, you know, and I have a half-brother, and he called at one point and said, you know, you're so much stronger than me. And I go, no, I'm not. I just learned a different way of doing things from what my family of origin taught me, and the family I really care about now did teach me that you don't have to go through life alone. You don't have to be an island. You can get help. And thank God for my sponsor. I spoke with him every day, if not more than once a day. He told me, call me anytime you need to. I'm talking to people after meetings and getting help. And when you're dealing with the kind of life and death situation I had there, it was important, and to remember exactly what I learned. And somewhere along the line, it really did get in. You know, I for years wanted to get this intellectual idea of a God, God, and I gave it up a long time ago. I don't know why. There's another one of those baffling things. I have to understand everything. I've got that kind of engineering brain, so I want to take apart and have the schematic for God. Because if I have the schematic for God, then I can believe in it. And you know what I realized? It's never going to be that way, you know? There was a guy back east who used to say, God can't be understood with the head, it has to be felt with the heart. And I really did get that at some point. You know, there's a phrase, a Jewish word, kashir, you know, what will be will be. And I really was getting that. And I was hanging out at that, in the ICU. And one of the nurses, ironically, one of the charge nurses turned out to be in AA for 7 years. And we ended up talking program a bit. And she said to me one point, she said, you know, it's really interesting because usually the relatives of the people drive you crazy. You know, us crazy. You know, because always, did you do this? Did you do this? Have you done this? Have you done this? She's doing this. Should it be? And I said, yeah, well, it's because they're afraid. They want to grasp some kind of feeling of control, you know. And the longer I'm around, the more I get this. All these things I did my entire life weren't things for control. They were illusions of control. That's all they ever were. They were illusions of control. And that, you know, and I really did get that. And I got that I'm powerless, you know. And it was tough. And one of the assets I utilized while I was there was a chaplain. Now, if you told me 20 years ago I was going to go utilize a chaplain at a hospital, like, you know, and I went and talked to him. I said, you know, I'm in this 12-step program that teaches me I'm not God, which I really do get. But I've been given this thing about, you know, end-of-life stuff, they call it. And, you know, you know, do we turn it off then? Do we pull this out? What do we do? And I really felt like I was being asked, you know, to be God. And he helped me with that. He really did. He said, no, you know, there's a big difference between how you deal with somebody who's temporarily sick or, you know, the next step. And it's a sort of a tough times we live in where, you know, as I was saying to somebody the other day, we can keep the meat warm a lot longer than the person's really alive, you know. And so I was able to figure out where that was. And at the same time, while this was going on, this was a 2.5-week ordeal where the doctor kept going, okay, well, we'll see about taking her off this thing tomorrow. Well, you know, and I was just more and more frustrated because it kept being one day after another and after another, and I'm like in Groundhog Day because my life's on hold back here, and I'm there, and I'm living in her apartment in the senior complex. It's strange. But it was such a microcosm of my life because I got to see afterwards that everything happened exactly, that 2.5 weeks happened exactly the way it needed to, and I couldn't see it until I was done and turned around and looked backwards. And so much of my life has been that. When I'm in the crap, I can't get it, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, and then when it's done, I turn around and look back and go, that's exactly the way things were supposed to happen. And when I got there, I was a little frustrated. You know, early on, she had said, well, you know, it's okay, let me go, that kind of thing, on one hand, and then she also said she was afraid on another. And, you know, I remember going to talk to the chaplain going, you know, I've really gotten it on a core level. I'm not afraid. If I'm meant to go tomorrow, it's okay. I don't want to, but it's okay. How can I help her? And he's like, well, you know, it's one of those things, it's a process, maybe she'll get there. Well, what happened about 2.5, 2+ weeks in, she wrote, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. And at this point, I began to realize this wasn't getting better. And that it won't, you know. And the gift and the intuitive thing was, I said, okay, maybe you are. You know, and I didn't try and hide it. I didn't want to make myself feel good and go, oh, no, don't feel me crazy. I said, maybe it is, you know. And I went and talked to both my sponsor, the person I'm dating is a psychologist, and she helped me with this and said, you know, you may want to let her know it's okay, you know. And I went back the next morning, and I had a talk with her. You know, she was getting unresponsive, but I talked to her and said, you know, I'm going to be fine. My brother is fine. He's going to move down near me. We'll be able to be with each other. It's okay. If you want to go, it's not going to be painful, which I didn't know. The one gift about this thing had to do with the lungs. For some lung disease, it's horrible death. This was not. It was an easy one. And so I mentioned all that, and I was talking, and at that point, we did finally sign this do not resuscitate thing. And I was talking to the doctors and the nurses about it, and they said, well, they can go anywhere. They can cling for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then I asked, well, how does the end happen? Is it, you know? And they said, well, if she starts to go unstable, and we usually turn the thing off because people get transfixed looking at the thing. Anyway, I got a call that night at 2 in the morning that she, you know, to come down to the hospital, and the nurse said she died. She died, and it was like she was there perfect 1 minute, gone the next. And I said, okay, this is what it was supposed to be. And the thing about it was there was never, not once in that 2.5 weeks did I walk with a knot in my stomach. I guarantee you, up until a couple of years ago, there would have been a knot in my stomach because that knot comes from feeling there's something I should be doing. There's something I should be doing to help her. Well, I don't have that control. She didn't have that control. The doctor who had many years of you know, more schooling than me in what she was sick with didn't have that control. God had the control, and God decided when it was time. And it was okay, and it happened. And then again, like I said afterwards, when I looked back and I went, this 2.5 weeks was a process. And I could see it once I was out. She wasn't ready to go 2.5 weeks ago, and I wasn't ready for her to go 2.5 weeks ago. I needed to be there. I needed to go through this, and it would be okay. And it has, and it was. And it happened in such a way where everything happened exactly the way it happened. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is this is 100% a result of the program, of you guys helping me, my sponsor, and my sponsors over the years who kept telling me, you're not in control, you're not in charge, God's in charge, everything's going to happen. And the reality is God was always, always in charge. I just couldn't accept it. And the difference is that when I accept it and I get it on a deep level, I don't walk around with that thing in my gut. And whenever it still happens, I'm a human being, I still get churns in the gut. It's because I'm not accepting anything, you know? That whole idea that it's a selfish program in a way, because whatever's going to happen is going to happen anyway, but it's going to choose as to whether it's in my gut or not, and whether I'm going to be happy or not. And did I want it? No. And I cried on the phone with my sponsor, and I was frustrated and all this stuff, but I accepted it, you know? Somebody said a long time ago, acceptance is doesn't mean you like it. It just means you accept it. And what a way to go through life that... It just becomes easier. It just becomes easier because all you're doing is just dealing with what happens. You know, so many of the frustrations for me in life were always had the subtext, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be. The guy out on the freeway driving 30 miles an hour in the left lane is not supposed to be driving 30 miles an hour. No, God wants that guy driving 30 miles an hour exactly that way. And he wants me to learn to accept that and either move around him or chill out or whatever. But that's an example, and it's a strange thing, because my mother is what I say I call in my other program, my main qualifier, and some of you who are in that other program know what that means, but she had many years of alcoholism. She got sober about 5 years before me, but didn't really go to program very much, and it was just a very unique thing that hit me after she passed away, because I was doing some stuff and starting to look at the timeline. I'm 51 years old. And I had 25 years of sobriety. My mother got sober at 51 years old. And my mother took me to AA meetings when I was 10 years old, 12 years old. I just didn't understand what AA meetings were about, except they were about three donuts. It was great. I'm a little overeater, and she's taking me to a place with three donuts? Sure, go ahead, Mom. You know, I didn't. But what happened is somewhere it went in. It went in. There was a gift there that I couldn't see at the time. But the gift I got from her was I got to live my life sober. I got to live the majority of my adult life sober and abstinent for the most part. And I got to see a different way of living. The little she got of it, she didn't get until the last years of her life. But that was the gift, the 12-step gift. And thank God, I had people, I would walk into meetings in Jacksonville after I was there a week, hey, John, how's your mother doing? You know, and they meant it. You know, you go to places out in the real world and you mention your mother sick, they'll ask you, and then you can be answering, and they're looking at who they're going to say hi to next. They meant it. They wanted to know. They helped. They're giving me cards. You need to talk anytime, day or night. And that's what this program does. It's reaching out and helping each other. And I really got to see what it was about. The rubber really hit the road, and It was the benefit was me. My mother was going to pass away no matter what I did, you know. And the difference was the program taught me how to deal with it and how to live with it. And so many of these other things that have happened to me lately, I begin to see that whole, it does change. Now, I had to do the footwork. I've got to go to meetings. I've got to read my big book. I've got to do step work. I've got to keep the food and the alcohol down, because otherwise how deep am I getting into this stuff? But then also part of that is I deal with these things clean, and sometimes they're really painful. And I didn't eat over any of that stuff. I came home, I had my meals, I didn't, you know, go run to 7-Eleven or McDonald's during that whole thing. I just did my less indicated stuff, and I felt the feelings. And the bottom line on my disease, whether it's got any of the roots that I use to numb out, is I'm a painophobe. I'm an emotional painophobe. I never, ever want to feel any kind of emotional discomfort. But I'm never going to grow. You know, as long as I find something to displace the emotional discomfort, I'm just going to... It's like being in a relationship with somebody, and you're dealing with your personal character defects, and you break up. And what happens, you end up in another relationship dealing with the same damn character defects again, instead of working through them. And by keeping the food down and getting through things that are painful, you go through them. For years, I would keep picking up when things got really painful. I'd be asking when everything was great, but when the shit hit the fan, I would eat. And it's like being a rat in a maze, and you go down this particular thing, and you get to the end of it, and you're not getting out, you're in the wrong thing of the maze, and you back your way all the way out, and then go down the exact same path, which is what was with the food. And this time, I said, well, I'll go find a different way. And it made all the difference in the world. And all I can say is that if you keep coming, if you keep doing the stuff you're supposed to, and you keep doing the you know, what the program teaches you, and read this big book and really get into it. I only really, really got into the big book in the last few years, and that's the main reason I've made the changes. I was coming through this door, I was talking the talk, but, you know, get into a good big book study. There's a couple of them out there now where they literally go, there's one or two in particular where they literally go through the big book, and it isn't like we read three or four pages and then somebody speaks. It's they stop and they talk about each paragraph. I think it makes a big difference. On some of those pages in the big book, you could read five pages and there's nothing really that deep, but you're going to hit some pages in the big book where every damn paragraph on that one page is incredibly intense and can make all the difference. And so it was doing the work, and it's changed me. The me that was there in Jacksonville is not the default John that came out of the box. I joke with, I date somebody in program, and I say, you know, you don't know this, but you got John 3.0. You know, my poor ex-wife got John 1.0. It was sober, by the way, but John 1.0, which was sober and just enough programmed to be dangerous. And then John 2.0 was sort of programmed and did some step work and got some more therapy. And John 3.0 is the one that's really started to get into this, and it's made all the difference because, you know, they talk about at the end of the 12th step having had a, you know, spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And you know, when I was first in program, I would hear people talk about a God-centered life, and I couldn't get that. I didn't understand what that was about. And I still have a little bit of trouble with that, but the main difference now is I don't need a John-centered life anymore. You know, it may not be, and probably is God-centered, but it's not John-centered. And the main difference was I was in such a narcissistic whirlpool of self that everything becomes amplified. And when all of a sudden you realize, I'm just one person in this big world of I don't know how many billion, and everybody has the same rights, and I don't get to, you know, expect the freeway to park, and I get to drive through. I'm one of the schlubs, and I'm the one causing, I'm the one making the traffic, you know? I want to gripe about the traffic. I'm in a car by myself. I'm part of the problem, you know? But the point being is you start to change your focus and your way of looking at things, and it makes a big difference. And I was there to be of service, and I would never, this is stuff that is so unlike me, you know. And all I can say is I really want to publicly thank my sponsor who's here, who was a phenomenal help to me during that whole thing, and to thank you guys for being there and saying things. I Len's here, he's doing this It's a Wonderful Life, and I this play for the birthday party, and I can't think of a more perfect concept for a play, because we don't know what we say. We don't know. I say something that sounds just flippant and offhand, and it touches somebody there who gets abstinent, who helps somebody else get abstinent, who helps somebody else get abstinent, who helps somebody else get abstinent, who becomes my sponsor because I went out for 5 years. You know what I mean? It can literally happen like that. And there is an amazing kind of thing. And I want to thank Darwin, and I want to thank you guys for all being here.
All right, we got one more speaker. Before we get to the speaker, I got to tell you this little thing I saw on TV yesterday. It was so perfect. This guy was not in program, and it was just after Thanksgiving. And he says, you know, I don't understand why people wait till Christmas to kill themselves. And after a day like this, Thanksgiving in the park, I can't see why anybody would want to kill themselves. So, now we're going to get to our final speaker, and then after that, we're going to let everybody else share. So let's get Ira up here.
Hi everyone, my name is Iron. I'm a compulsive overeater. It's great to be here. John, where is he? He's trying to be Jewish, and all my life I tried to have his hair and be Irish. Which is what we do. Would you guys indulge me for a second? I'm gonna share something with you that my AA sponsor did to give me a sense of what the program is. And this is a very interesting exercise. Would everybody here, just for a second, focus on something, look at something? Okay? You doing that? Okay, now, if everyone, without trying to keep looking at it, turn your heads 5 degrees to the right of whatever it is that you're seeing, and just keep looking straight. You doing that now? Has the picture changed? No, no. Did the picture change? In other words, is what you're looking at changed? What moved? In other words, everything's the same, but you got a new picture just by moving your head 5 degrees to the right. That's the program. See? And that's one of the things that I learned. I'd like to thank Darwin. To qualify, I mean, I'm sure a lot of you, I know a lot of you. One other thing before I start, you know, I'm from the Valley, and it's one of my favorite sayings that my AA sponsors talk about, those of us in the Valley, especially since we're on the west side here. Those of us in the Valley may not be pretty, but we are sincere. So, trust that. And then, of course, like George Burns said when he won his first Oscar, you know, as a supporting actor in The Sunshine Boys, he was at the press conference afterwards, and somebody asked him, how did you get, you know, the Oscar as your first shot out? He says, it's very simple. He says, it's honesty. If you can fake that, you got it made. And I'm really glad to be here. It's to qualify, I have been abstinent and in Overeaters Anonymous since September 7th of 1983. So, God willing, December 7th will be 23 years and 3 months of abstinence. And I'm 100 pounder. I'm maintaining about 135 pound weight loss for about 21 years. And I was just, in fact, I have the honor to take my sponsor to my home meeting. Marty, it's Marty D, who's been my sponsor for about now 21 years. And he's 79 years old and he's got women problems. And I want what he has, you know. And I'm happily married. I mean, my wife is in the program. She's absent 14 years. She's, you know, she's with our son Jason cooking dinner, and I have this beautiful house. My studio's downstairs. I'm in the music business. I like what I do. I like what I drive. I'm in a great relationship. A lot of healing has taken place, and I still wake up anxious. You know, and that's the way it is, you know. What can I tell you? You know, you guys have given me a lot. Lately, my relationship with everything's changing. My career, I do a lot of production music, and I've arranged music for movies, been successful, and haven't worked on a movie in the last couple of years. Business has changed, but I've never been writing music better than what I've been doing now. Made a good living, and I still get worried. What's the saying? If you pray, why worry? If you worry, why pray? You know, that kind of thing. The reason I worry is because I like to worry. You know, because I think I know who I am. You know, a lot of people talk about feelings, you know, and we talk about... It's very interesting. People will try and find a causative relationship why I overeat. There are a lot of psychology in here. And I have a great shrink. I'd be Jewish. I'm Jewish. I'd have nothing less. You know. But that never stopped me from compulsive overeating. See. And drinking. I'm sober the same amount of time I'm absent. So I was... John talked about John 3.0. Jesus. I came in a Commodore 64 with a bad hard drive. Oh, no, the hard drive was okay. The processors, man, were really screwed. And I've graduated up now to being like, Power Mac. I do all my work on computer, you know. And in fact, I was a computer sponsor. I was afraid to get a computer. I had written music, by hand, and because I'd written wrong for 25 years, I have permanent damage in my neck, that, you know, and I'm left-handed, and it really looked left-handed. And so a guy named Steve at a men's stag offered in 1995 to be my computer sponsor, and he told me exactly what to do, what store to go to, and to look, touch, you know, they're going to try and sell it to you, but just get the feel that you can do this. And As a result of that, I became one of the first orchestrators in Hollywood here to do everything on computer. You know, like to do scores of, you know, and so it's a lot. There is nothing. One of the things I believe about Overeaters Anonymous is that there is absolutely, it will give you everything that you really desire. Not that you think that you desire, but that you really desire. You know? I mean, I could, look, every fantasy you could live out in here. And if you don't believe that, go to a meeting sometimes and think about what you're hearing. You know? It'll give you everything. So, my AA sponsor was also in the music business. And he would tell me, it's like the cheapest piece of theater you're ever going to, it's cheap entertainment, man. Look, for now it's $3, it's gone up, you know, but then theater tickets have gone up to $10, so, you know. But I mean, you can hear everything, you know, and it's, the whole thing, I mean, there's nothing new in the big book, you know. I mean, it talks about, and what's happened to me, you know, in the spiritual experience. Remember, this is a spiritual program. Let me talk about gratitude for a minute. I mean, I thought John was going to take my line about gratitude. In fact, first of all, the word gratitude comes from the word grace. And the definition of grace is an unmerited gift from God. In other words, you get a gift without having to do anything for it. Okay? And from that comes the word gratitude. And I was with my sponsor last night, and he shared very interesting, Marty, talking about that. And I'm like that when he goes to Thanksgiving, it's about being thankful, not about the food. That the food is a manifestation of being grateful. Look what we have. Ain't we lucky, like John was just talking about. So I did a gratitude list the first time, because I was like, you know, when you're a 100-pounder and you come into this thing and you stop overeating, you're nuts. Okay? And everybody and everything hits you funny. You know? And so somebody told me to do a gratitude list. And I thought John was going to say the same thing that that happened to me. So I was feeling, you know, antsy and, what is it, restless, irritable, and discontented. You know? And he said, write a list of 50 things that you're grateful for. 50. And thank God, I learned something very fundamental about the third step. You know, when I got abstinent and I found a sponsor immediately and all of this stuff. I was at an AA meeting where a guy who had about 40 years of sobriety talked, it was a step study. And he talked about the third step, and he didn't want to talk about it. He was ill, and he and actually later that year passed away. But he really didn't want to talk about it. And it was a men's day. He says, look, I don't really want to be here. I don't want to talk about this, but I'll tell you what the third step is you do what you're told. And man, I don't like to hear things like that. Or here's another one for the third step, or acceptance. He's, all right, officer, I'll come quietly. You ever tell you, well, you think that that's not true? Think about Mel Gibson. Okay? I mean, you know, that's the result of not doing the third step. I'm sure if Mel had done the third step, his career and his whole thing would be a different thing, but I don't know that, because I don't know what God is about. But anyway, so I was doing what I was told a lot. Because you act as if you bring the body, the mind will follow. You know? It's about action. Because, you know, I think, where is it? I think it's I was told to read 2 pages of the book, of this book every day, reread it, put it down, because my sponsor knew I wanted to graduate. You know, and people have talked about control. It's funny, the reason that there is so much talk about psychology, or at least in my mind, and I'm constantly looking for the answer is, why? Because if I look for the answer and I understand it, I can control it. And if I find out what my parents did, then I'll understand it, then I'll be able to control my food. But the paradox is, if I'm a compulsive overeater, I can't control it. It doesn't matter. And how many people, you know, go nuts trying to figure this out? So what I'm left with is, as my friend Oscar used to say, my head is like a bad neighborhood. It's a dangerous place to hang out. You know, I have to stop thinking. In fact, one of the great main talks I've ever heard is when a guy substitutes the 20 questions of AA, the word think for drink, and would say things like, have you ever lost a job because of excessive thinking? Has excessive thinking ever adversely affected your sex life? If you can answer yes to more than two of these, probably you're an alcoholic, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm left with this thing. So you guys, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there are something like 126 different 12-step programs now. You guys found something about spirituality, or taught me something about spirituality. As if you didn't know, I grew up Jewish. I was in Laramie, Wyoming one time, and I went into a souvenir store. I was on the way back from a business trip, driving, and I go in, and the proprietor's name was Morris Wolf. He took one look at me and he says, "You're a Lansman?" I says, "This is Laramie, Wyoming. How many of us are there here?" And he said, "Six." We're everywhere. That is both Jews and compulsive overeaters, whether you're Jewish or not. You know, so, and just, you know, they ain't going to get rid of us. Either Jews or compulsive overeaters. Dinner groups aside, we will still prevail. That's a big change for me. I've been involved in intergroup and world service for 20 years, and I gave it up. I've seen things that I really are painful, but the gratitude for me is that I walked out of an intergroup meeting and didn't say a word. Because if I had said something, it would have been about me. And by not saying something, maybe some people will think about what's going on. In fact, in this book, in the 10th step, in the AA 12 and 12, it talks about restraint of tongue and pen. I've done many inventories. Anyway, about this gratitude list. So I do this list. And 50 things. And I did it overnight. And I couldn't reach my sponsor, but I reached a friend, a guy who had more time than me. And he said, and I read the list. And he says, "Ira," he says, "I find this gratitude list very interesting." I said, "Why is that?" He says, "Because you put the fact that you were alive 48th out of 50. Think about it. You know, you talk about screwed up priorities, right? But that's that unmerited gift that we get. You know, people talk about the promises all the time, the promises. I think most, you know, we hear them by rote, but there are promises. The ones that are most widely read are the ones that are a result of it says halfway through. What are they talking about halfway through? It's halfway through your amends. A lot of people talk about the steps and the tools. That's not high. It's the steps and traditions, because the steps tell me about me, the traditions tell me how to live with you. And the tools are exactly that. They are tools. They are not the nexus of the program, but that's how I learned it. But I used to have to, in this program, I used to have to get into fights with people about stuff like this. Because the reason that I overeat is because I'm insecure. The reason I'm insecure is because I don't trust anybody or anything, because at heart, I'm a dishonest person. You know, and so the first thing, we admitted, right? So I had to find somebody, and I don't know about you, but like what happens for me is, I think that when I'm going to talk to my sponsor, that the stuff is going to hit the fan. He's going to tell me to do something. I could tell you one that's a great story. I think it's a good story, so I ought to be careful. I think it's a good story. It's like I have a great idea. So you know what my sponsor says? He says, "Tell you what, take a couple of aspirin, go to sleep, and if you still wake up with that idea, call me in the morning and we'll see what we can do about it." But what happened was is that like a lot of people, I mean, I came in here with a lot of relationship problems and and was basically in a relationship where there was no intimacy. And, you know, I certainly had a great part of that, but I met a lady, and like I said, this program will give you everything. I was so shut down, I felt clumsy at 325, that was my high weight. My first driver's license, when I came in, I lied, because it said I was 5'11 and weighed 260. And in truth, I weighed about 325 and was 5'6¼. So, like, whatever way you think you can lie, there will always be somebody that can lie better than you. See, and that's the thing about anonymity. Man, when I went to the first meeting that I went to, which was a 100 pounders meeting, which is still my home meeting, I thought I'd be the fattest guy there. They took that away from me, too, because there was a guy named Don H. And, you know, I hadn't really experienced a meeting, but there's these women, right, and a bunch of women, and there's this guy, Don H., who's like, you know, he's a, what do you call it, Lothario or a Don Juan or something. The guy is 550 pounds. I said, damn, I can't even, you know, I'm not even number one at that, you know. But he's gone and I'm not. And what I found out is that part of the thing for me, the anxiety is, of course, being invisible and all of this, you know, and being forgotten. And you guys don't forget me, you know. I will go anywhere to hear me talk, you know. What a great place you guys pick, man. And what's great is the check you're going to give me when I leave. It's great. No, actually, you've given me an incredible life. And it's one-to-one. See, it's I learned about unconditional welfare. Okay, I even heard that term. And what one sponsor said to me is that I want you to win regardless of what you think of me. And isn't that a great feeling? I'll give you another one. In 1988, I had 5 years of abstinence, and I had to go to Munich, Germany to record a motion picture score. And it was my first experience of having to go to Overeaters Anonymous, or to attempt to do Overeaters Anonymous outside of the United States. And there was a guy around, some people remember Bill Bluestein, who was a legend in his own mind. Well, he did a lot of circuit speaking and did a lot of talks out, and I talked to him, and he said, call this guy Chaim. He says he'd be a great host. He's in Munich. And so I did the footwork. I got the list of meetings, and there were about 15 at that time in 88 meetings of Overeaters Anonymous, 11 of which said München, 4 of which said Munich, implying that the 4 saying Munich were English-speaking meetings. So I talked to Chaim. He says, oh, great. He says, well, I have a meeting when you get here. Just give me a call. So, you know, it's a 13-hour flight from here, and on top of everything, we get in we left on a Saturday night, get in Sunday morning, and find out that we have to write some extra music for this date. It was a movie called Devil in Vienna. It was about the Kristallnacht, and, you know, so there was a lot of interesting, you know, feelings about that. And but I'm standing, and I'm calling my food. I still call my food in every day, and I will today too, before I eat it, because it's too easy for me with this mind to say, oh geez, instead of having like fruit, I had 3 cherry pies, my bad. You know, that's how my mind works, you know. So it's better if I'm going to have the cherry pies. And I got that right away from my sponsor. He said, just be straight about it, you know. Just say what you're going to say. Do what you say. Say what you're going to do. Do what you say. So if you're going to have cherry pies, own it, you know, if you're going to do it. And I haven't had cherry pies. I haven't had any bread, red meat, which is a major binge food for me, since September 7th of 83. You know, I haven't had to, and it's gotten easy. Anyway, so like, I was still calling my food in. So here I am in Munich, and just wigged out from the jet lag and all that stuff. And so I call him. And so it's Sunday night. He says, oh, tomorrow night we got a meeting. So I tell him I'm at the Fear Guard site in the Marienplatz in the center of Munich. And I don't know where I'm at. I'm with a composer. I'm with a music editor. I don't know anybody. I don't speak German. You know, and there I am, just wigged out and tired and all that. And so they picked me up, this guy and a woman. Now I learned about Ovrya Zemes, and a guy and a woman who was a beautiful, her name was Petra. She was had to be 25 years younger than him. Who knew? You know, anything's possible. And so they say, I introduce myself. They're real glad to see me. We get on the underground. And again, I'm tired. I don't know where I'm at. We drive for a while. It looks like a military installation. We get out. We go into a room that looks like any one of the old churches, except very small, with a couch and a table and a couple of chairs. Oh, and on the way, a woman gets in with a box of literature in English. Her name is Beth. And there's the four of us. They're sitting, talking. They set up the literature. And then... So it's about 10 minutes. I'm sitting by myself on the couch and talking. And I say, oh, when's the meeting going to start? And they say to me, oh, are you ready? I said, well, what do you mean? And they said, he proceeded to tell me that although there were four English-speaking meetings listed, that those basically are for the military who come in and out of, you know, Germany. And they really didn't have any meetings in English at the time I came, but when they heard I was coming, they wanted to have a meeting in English for me so that I wouldn't feel alone. And these are people who I never met 8,000 miles away. It is very hard to hate yourself, although I can do it, when somebody shows you that kind of love. See, I don't know what God looks like. And in the book it says we want to have our head in the clouds but our feet on the ground. That's where our fellow travelers are, and that's how we best serve. See, so this whole thing is about action. They told me, bring the body, the mind will follow. In AA, they had another one that's great that I think that we could use in OA. You got two eyes, two ears, one mouth. Use them accordingly. I have never gotten in trouble by keeping my mouth closed. Never. You know. Never. Because there are only three answers in the universe, yes, no, and not now. You know. And here I am. And... like what's going on is, as time goes on, my life has not gotten easier. It has gotten better. Two different things. There's like easy does it, but do it. You know? There's always, I have easy does it all over my bumper, in my car, because people would say, take it easy. What do you mean, take it easy? You know? And I finally got that, like, it is a one day at a time thing. For everything. And that what I've learned is that all the things I'm afraid of, which are real out in the service, man, I know my absence is clean. You know. I don't even think about it. I know, I'll probably have more food than I usually do, because the table is a bigger table than it usually is. But I know it's going to be abstinent. And I know what I'm going to eat today. I'm going to eat probably a couple of helpings of turkey. I'm going to probably have some string beans and the stuff with the mushroom soup or whatever. And I won't have any. I'll have some fruit. Maybe have a yam. And the reason I can say this to you is because I'm going to look anybody in the eye here and say, that's what I'm going to do. See, I mean, there's this whole thing. Well, we shouldn't talk about food because it may make somebody hungry. You know? Jesus, this is Overeaters Anonymous. If I can't talk about food here... And like the book says, it says we have no opinion about alcohol as an institution, you know, and that if we all preached abstinence in AA, that like some guy would go up to the Greenland ice cap, but there would probably be an Eskimo up there with like a bottle of whiskey and that blow everything, you know. I mean, we're adults, you know, and this whole thing about not wanting, it's like. Like, for instance, you know what you hear here? What's the thing that we always hear here when somebody's having trouble with food? My food got bigger. No, I ate more. In other words, I have to take responsibility. And I was talking about And because I have such low self-esteem, I assume that when somebody says to me, sponsors, give me a call back, I want to talk to you, that they're gonna wipe the floor with me. So, point being that I have this, here I am, I came into Overeaters Anonymous, and I this lady who sort of embodied the fantasy that I'd always had, long red hair, you know, she's voluptuous, you know, really intense eyes, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought about somebody like that, and she came up to me. It's like, what's even my fault? You know? I mean, I was so self-obsessed, I didn't notice it when people were giving me compliments, you know. And so we started seeing each other. There was one minor problem, is that she was married, though unhappily, and so was I, though unhappily. And it took sponsors, knew everything that was going on. Everything. And so that when, and they said, you're going to end it. Because, like, the more self-esteem you get, it's not going to be acceptable. And I didn't believe it, but they were right. And the hardest thing is when she said, well, can't we get together one more time? And I said, no, we can't. See, me, the kind of person I am, since I'm such a people pleaser, is like, I sort of equivocate, like, sort of to leave the door open, just in case, you know, it's just like anything else, right? So what happens is, the lady and I got together. Without getting into gory details, okay, I'm going to finish up with this story. It got physical, and I want to call up my sponsor. But I'm afraid to, because I'm afraid I'm going to get lectured to and all that stuff. So I call my AA sponsor, who's a Pacific Group guy. And Joe knew me. See, the thing is, you guys understand who I am and what I need, even if I don't. So he says, I tell him what happened. So he says, Ira, I just want to ask you one thing. Uh-oh. Did you have fun, for Christ's sake? That's what I mean. I didn't know how to have fun. I still don't. But you guys have given me an incredible life. And at its heart, it's one overeater helping another. You can talk all about all kinds of things, but here's a very curious thing. When I'm here talking to you and trying really to help you, I'm not thinking about my problems. And I feel better. I don't feel like overeating. This is the 24th Abstinence and Thanksgiving I expect to have. Thanks for letting me share. Keep coming back.